It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And we are all back together and back to 1 hour. For those of you who were around last week, know that we graciously filled in, or I should say graciously accepted, a gracious offer from Angela to take her hour. And apparently everything's fine because she came back today and was looking and sounded pretty good. So welcome back. Today. Well, first off, all of the regulars, we always like to welcome you and remind you, you keep listening, we'll keep talking. If you're new to this show, stick around for the hour if you can, and you'll learn something, guaranteed. And if you can't, don't forget, you can always get past shows on our website, Scrivis Wealth Partners, not the website, scriviswealth.com is the shortened version for the website. But we'll have the program on sometime Monday every week, and we'll have the commercials taken out of it. Never an excuse to miss the show completely, although it's much more fun at the time. That's why we do a live show, because it's more fun at the time. Which means if you call 904-222-8255 anytime during the show, we'll interrupt what we're saying in order to put you on. We'll talk about what you want to talk about. And today, I have a feeling that could be most anything.
There is a lot to talk about.
There is indeed. First off, my market response here has some minus signs on it, but the numbers are so small it hardly matters. It wasn't a great week, but it wasn't a bad week.
No, it really wasn't. And in fact, I was going to mention this later, but I'll just bring it up now. On Wednesday of this week, many of our client accounts were at all-time highs. So they're under the surface. The headline numbers look bad, but under the surface, there's a lot going on that isn't bad. And I'll get to more about that later. But even with the down week, most of that damage was done on Friday. If you took Friday out, it was actually a pretty flat week. So and what happened on Friday was the PPI report came out, and it was hotter than expected. It came in at 0.5% increase versus a 0.3% that was expected. That's a month-over-month number. For the year, the number now sits at 2.9 year-over-year. What is 2.9 lower than? Oh, three. The number that I've been saying for, I don't know, months now should be the target inflation rate. And for whatever reason, we're fixated on this 2% number that is not realistic. And this is just another example of that. I don't think that 2.9% year-over-year inflation number is a disaster, for what it's worth.
Oh, and again, I look up trueflation every morning, 1.49.
Okay, so it ticked up, but it's still really low. Yeah, there's three reasons I'm not really worried about this that particular number. One, energy prices fell 2.7% in January, and food prices fell 1.5%. Those are just one-off readings, but they're both going in the right direction. So
those are two things that everybody feels.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Those are real daily things that affect your life.
Yep. I've got some more information on that for later in the show, too, something that'll open a few eyes.
The prices of intermediate unprocessed goods also fell 0.5% in January and are now down 6.1% from a year ago. So that seems counterintuitive to a 3% inflation rate, but that is what it is.
What happened to the mortgage rate?
I'm getting there. Hold on.
I figured you might be.
So my second point is the Supreme Court just shot down tariffs. That news has not had any time to show up in the data yet. Doesn't mean that tariffs are going away entirely, but the current situation with tariffs is going to change dramatically. The third thing is inflation is a monetary phenomenon, and the monetary supply is up just 4.3% in the last year. The long-term average increase in the monetary supply is closer to 6%, and so it's trending well under. That leads me to believe that a one-month jump in PPI is not really foreshadowing the return of 9% inflation.
Yeah.
Oh, that in January, we talked about this last week briefly, that's when people put their big companies increase their prices for the year done in January. That makes it look artificially high.
That is possible. Yeah, mm-hmm. There can be some of that.
It doesn't explain the whole thing, but there's some of that in there.
Well, also, with all data, government data, you need to look at the trend and not a 1 month sort of reading. It doesn't really tell you anything. Look at the annual. At 2.9%, I'm very comfortable with that number.
Me too.
One reason for the strong performance of diversified portfolios this year has been international equities. While the U.S. is sitting on pretty modest gains or even losses, international equities have been booming. Year to date, Korea has been the biggest winner, gaining over 48%, while Taiwan is up over 22%. Brazil, Japan, and Mexico all have double-digit gains as well. So we have been increasing our international equity exposure for the last 2 years, roughly, and that's really paying off right now. So we've increased it, and then it's also been increasing just because it's performed so well. Some potential good news for the housing market, as we alluded to earlier, mortgage rates fell below 6% for the first time since 2022. So that's really good news if you're a buyer, or if you're sitting on a 7% mortgage. I honestly don't think we're going to see a significant push downward on those 5.9% mortgage rates.
No, I think if you can pick up the whole point, it's really worth looking at.
Well, I also don't think you're going to see like a 5% mortgage rate anytime soon. Either. So I don't think if you continue to wait, there's risk in that. Mm-hmm. And I just don't see a lot of market dynamics that would lead me to believe that we're going to see the return of the 3% mortgage.
And some lenders will, if you ask them nicely, they will just change your rate without charging you a bunch of money to do it.
Yeah, you can always ask. Money. The worst thing they can say is no.
Well, you just tell them up front, hey, I'm shopping around for a new mortgage.
Exactly.
And if you want to compete, here's how to do it.
Yeah.
Worked for me last time. Now I'm sitting at 3.
Yeah, I think like buying a car, you just make it not urgent. Like, hey, I'm thinking about it. I don't have to refinance.
Exactly. But
Or if I do, I might go to another company and you're going to lose the business. So what do you want to do for me?
Yeah.
You have to come in with the power play. They're not going to aggressively call you. Although I remember a few years ago.
There was a time, yeah. Those days are gone, though. Yeah, I don't think that's
the world
happening.
Was a completely different place when they were aggressively calling people.
Yeah.
And the business, there wasn't enough business to go around, so they wanted to retain what they had, and they acted on it.
For sure. But yeah, I think that it is a good time to look at refinancing out of a 7% mortgage if you have one. So take a look at it. Mm-hmm. You might be surprised how much it changes your payment.
Yeah, and points, you know, if we're confident we're not going to see the fours, you know, maybe paying points makes sense. If you're in the early part of a mortgage, you got a long way to go.
Maybe.
If you want to be sure that you don't have to refinance again in 2 years, if we're wrong here, you know, that's an option.
It really depends on your specific situation. Yeah. And so I would do some analysis on that.
For
and
sure.
Also, how long you plan to stay in the house is
definitely
a huge
that's
component.
Probably the biggest.
Yeah. I think too few people think of shopping around for an ARM mortgage when they know they're not going to be in the house forever. And you can get an ARM a lot cheaper than you can get a 30-year or 15-year fix.
Yeah, if you know you have to move in a year to 5 years, that's not a bad strategy.
Get a 7 for padding and call it good.
ARMs are on the rise.
I'm not surprised. Yeah. That makes sense.
Well, that's any way to get into a house. All right, we have to take a quick break. We'll have trivia right afterwards, so don't go anywhere. There's lots to talk about. This is the Banwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banwee.
I'm Adam Banwee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And I remind everyone, lines are open, 904-222-8255, where you can try to answer my trivia question of the day, which is, as usual, brought to you by Paul Lloyd at First Coast Alarm. Call Paul at 904-636-7888. Technology's been on a tear lately. Everybody knows between the AI and everything else that's going on. I got a technology question. How many of you had those old-fashioned pagers that would go beep, 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 and there'd be a number on it, then you had to find a telephone and call it back? How many of those are still active today across the country?
What are they used for besides drug dealing?
I think there's enough drug dealers to keep the business going.
Okay.
That's probably the case. Anyway, I know what's on everybody's mind this morning, but I did want to have Adam just wrap up a couple more things on the market, and then Joey's got some insight on the news of the day, and we'll go back to that right after Adam wraps up.
Yeah, I wanted to mention NVIDIA. They released their earnings this week, and once again, they improved on their previous quarter, which was one of the best quarters any company has ever had, and they topped it again.
And they were very, very optimistic they're going to keep doing it.
This quarter, revenue reached $68.1 billion for the quarter, and that's an increase of 73% year over year. Earnings per share beat estimates as well at $1.62, and gross margin was a pretty incredible 75%. Revenue forecast for Q1 is $76 to $79 billion. That's incredible.
My gosh. Yeah.
That's bigger than us. That's crazy.
That's
yeah, and he had to save that company not too many years ago.
That's so incredible. So of course, when they announced that, the stock fell.
Of course.
Yeah. It's been
some weeks all news is bad news.
Yeah, for sure.
Other times not so much.
For the rest of the market, both earnings and beat rates declined over last quarter, but they remain very high relative to history. Revenue rates were at 72.8%. That's really high.
That's solid.
Outside of last quarter, it's one of the highest I've ever seen.
Me too.
Earnings were at 68.7, which isn't quite as incredible, but still a good number. And 10.1% of companies raised guidance, while 8.6 lowered, which is a positive spread. So so the market is saying that things are pretty good right now.
Mm-hmm. And our client portfolios are saying the same thing.
Yeah, despite the turmoil, it's not been a bad quarter.
Yep. It's just a different mix that's being successful right now.
Yeah, yeah. The value stocks are doing quite well.
Mm-hmm.
So some of those indexes are strong. International is doing great. Small cap, despite the weakness on Friday, has been pretty solid. So yeah, there's definitely some good areas, and bonds have been doing well also.
Mm-hmm. And certain sectors like aerospace and defense are really booming.
Yeah.
And speaking of such things.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to change anytime soon.
What happened this morning when you woke up and found out that, well, for the second time this week, the world is at war? The first time, Pakistan declared all-out war on Afghanistan. And this time, it's us and Israel versus the Ayatollahs of Iran. And I asked Joey on the way into the building if he had some kind of a whatever synopsis of it or expectations or whatever, and he said he did. So I want to hear it.
So I was just curious. I figured as we came on here that people would be curious. Okay, well, what does this mean for the market? What can we expect? And war, the onset of a war is always a weird period for the market, and everybody kind of rushes to value and seeks some sort of shelter from the unknowns, because of course any onset of a war is a massive spike in unknowns. And so I think history suggests, if we look at the Gulf War, the 2003 Iraq War, and even the 2022 invasion of Ukraine, markets often initially price in the worst case scenario at the onset. Once the initial shock passes and the actual scope of the conflict becomes bounded, we kind of have an idea of what this is going to look like, or at least the delusion of a perception that we understand what it's going to look like. Markets frequently bottom out and then begin recovering during that conflict. One thing I think we could be pretty sure of is that oil prices are going to rise in the near term. But I think knowing which industries or how various industries are going to be impacted really depends on an understanding of the scope of the conflict. You know, last year, the year before, we had a 12 days war that quickly wrapped up that had almost no impact in a meaningful way on the market. If we end up in a situation that's much more like Iraq or the Gulf War, then we have a very different situation on our hands. And really, it becomes a game of watching what does oil's increased price, like who really suffers the most from that. But beyond that, I think it just takes time for people to figure out what does this mean.
And how many people will wake up Monday morning and decide, I got to sell, and they'll be selling right into the only part that has a probability of turning into a free fall. Wonder how many people do that. If you're hearing our voices for wherever you are, I'm just tell you right now, that's not a very good idea, because you'll be selling low only to buy high later, and it doesn't work.
No, I mean, it typically, any whether it's war or anything else, disruptive technology, history suggests the best thing to do. I should have worn my Buy the Dip shirt today. I have a bespoke Buy the Dip. It's never going to hurt you long term. I mean, historically, it's never hurt you to buy as things go down, because at some point, the world comes to its senses or things clean up and the market starts to go back up because everybody wants to grow.
Yeah, especially over geopolitical events. They tend to drive the market in the short term, but there's really almost no influence on the long-term performance.
I remember something happened in April of last year where everybody thought we were going to have a whole lot of trouble for a long time.
Was that the month of the Chinese AI?
Oh, that was
a cheap one?
That was prior to that. I was...
No, this was the tariff.
The tariffs, yeah. Remember everybody... just kind of lost their minds in the short term. But then, you know, anybody who bought during that dip enjoyed a 2-hour period on April 9th. I'll never forget it.
That was
where
crazy.
The market rose 10% as the three of us were standing in Adam's office, our jaws on the floor looking at the TV.
What? Well, you know, the computers of the world that actually do the trading on Wall Street for the big boys, they're a lot quicker than we are. So sometimes it's just fun to watch. Were you in the business during the flash crash?
No, I don't think so.
And I don't remember. That was probably before Adam.
I was around for one of them.
The one that was about 6,000 points in a few minutes?
Yeah. And it was, yeah. And then a bunch of trades were canceled. And, mm-hmm. yeah, I was around for that.
Yeah, I was at home. I can't remember why. I think it was a Thursday, but I was at home. And Sarah and I were having lunch. And I had the TV on in the background. I started watching, and the numbers were really moving. And it dropped 1,000, then 2, then another one. And I told her, watch, there's a number that's programmed into every computer in this country. And when that number gets hit, it's going to jump back up. After not very long, it hesitated for quite a while, and it started to tick up, and then it shot right back. It had to be a mistake. There was no other reason, which is one of the reasons that Adam and I have said ever since he's been around, if you can't explain what's happening, then it's probably not going to last long. There had to be a reason, and there was no reason for this except somebody pushed the wrong button, hit the wrong number of zeros or something, and the whole thing just fell apart. People were tearing their hair out trying to sell. Just wait. Watch. Everything was fine. So if you're thinking that on Monday morning, should the market actually start tanking, if you're thinking I should get out, don't do it. You know, we have to talk people off the ledge so often, but then they always thank us later because it's never, ever going to pay off if you try to sell into a problem like this. So I'm not even saying it'll happen.
So the actual flash crash, the one they call that, happened on May 6, 2010, so I was not involved. But there was one since I got in the business where I had a couple of clients call me and say, why is my ETF down 35%? Mm-hmm. And there was no reason.
Sometimes there is a reason, and it has to do with a stock split or something like that.
No, this was an error.
Was this 2018?
Maybe. I honestly don't remember what year it was, but I had a couple of calls and I started looking into it and it was like, yeah, it's down that much. And I was like, how can we buy more?
Right.
And then it just automatically corrected. And then I heard later that day that all trades that were placed during that time were canceled out and you weren't able to take advantage of it.
This is dislocation from any type of event like this, even a flash crash, right, where you have algorithms just going crazy making these decisions. Every one of these dislocations is one of the best buying opportunities for the disciplined investor that ever come around. Because over time, there's a reversion to the mean. That's your best friend as an investor. And if you have a strategic asset allocation that makes sense for everything that matters to you in your life, how you're going to spend your money, all of that, and you stick to it like a religion, and things get out of whack, you rebalance, guess what? Things that have underperformed tend to overperform in the periods thereafter. Things that have overperformed tend to underperform. And I can't think of a better 3-month period, actually 6 months now.
To illustrate that.
Than this now, one that we're in.
I mean, international being an excellent example, small caps being another one.
And it's hard to do that because after 10 years of the Mag 7 carrying everything.
You guys are taking advantage of people who have to take their required minimum distributions to do some selling to get the money from the things that are successful. So it's kind of a backdoor rebalancing of an account when you mm-hmm. choose what to get rid of and what to keep in the account when it has to deliver some money.
Yeah, or people that are drawing on their portfolio, we get to do that monthly, mm-hmm. and it really helps.
Yeah, and if you go into your trading with an eye toward taxes rather than world events, you can do yourself a lot of good.
Yeah.
Most people I know aren't paying a lot of capital gains yet because at strategic moments we've taken some losses and they accrue. It's only $3,000 a year, but it helps. All right, we've got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with lots more stuff. Don't go anywhere. This is the Vanwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanwee.
I'm Adam Vanwee.
And I'm Joey Loth.
And I remind everyone, lines are open, 904-222-8255, where you can take a shot at the trivia. How many good old-fashioned pagers are still in use in the U.S. right now? And I also suspect that there's a lot of things on everyone's mind, so if you just want to call and talk about geopolitical problems and relate it to the impact on the market, that kind of thing, that's fine too. Otherwise, I'm saying that we probably don't have a lot more to say about the current war status, because it's not going to be something that consumes us, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agree with that? I don't think the markets will care, like, not to be heartless. Markets tend to not care that much over the long term about a conflict of this nature.
They might care Monday morning.
Yeah.
They might.
Over the long, ultimately, I don't think it'll materially impact the markets.
Well, you all know about Trump accounts by now, if you've been listening to the show regularly, where all the newborns that, the births that take place in 2025, 6, 7, and 8 will get spotted a grand by the government for opening up a Trump account, and that money can't be used until they're at least 18, at least not without some grave exceptions. And families can add, and some employers can add, and some of them are doing that. Now, you don't have to be born between 25 and 28 to have a Trump account. You can open a Trump account for any kid you want to. You just won't get the $1,000. I think there are better ways to invest for your kid. But for the $3,000, I'd probably open one.
Heck yeah.
Definitely.
I think we were just talking about this before the show, but I think it's a really interesting social experiment to see.
And it's not the last one that we're going to talk about today either.
Is it going to change the lives of people who would otherwise not have had access to a gift like that of $1,000 and that time in the market? So we'll see. I don't know.
All right, I'm going to go back. And before I go forward with this story, I'm going to go backwards. Everybody around here is familiar with a subset of people around, especially true in the beaches, but I'm sure it's everywhere. And these are people that are very skilled in certain things, whether it's carpentry or tile or wood floors or anything. And a lot of these people have been off the grid since they got out of high school. They come in, they work for cash, they do a great job, they're nice, you call them, they show up, we got a bunch of them. But there's a lot of people who have been doing that now for decades, and they're wearing themselves out. If you've been doing this and you're turning 60 and you've been working with your hands and your back and you have been off the grid, one day you're going to walk into the Social Security office and you're going to say, I want to sign up. And they're going to look at you and say, and who are you? Because they've never paid in. Now, there's so many of those people that it's a bona fide problem in the country already. If this stems a little of that, I say, good, let's do it. So, you know, people don't know enough to start these things by themselves. That's the problem. So one way to do it is with newborns, you get their interest right away. But now Trump's come up with a second one. It's called the Federal Retirement Match for workers left out of 401ks. And that just came up in the State of the Union address. What he's proposing is that people who are not covered by a plan at work will get a similar to a TSP or 401k account, and the government will match 50 cents on the dollar up to $1,000 per person per year. And it's controversial, and I'm not exactly sure yet where I stand. And the reason I say that is I feel it's going to hit a lot of people who would otherwise just put money in an IRA. And if their concern is that the IRA contribution limits are so low, I have a better idea. Raise the contribution limits. It takes an act of Congress. We can talk them into that. I don't know about general revenues funding Trump accounts and the non-401k, 401k account. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just kind of on the fence. What do you guys think?
I need time with that. I'm with you.
I don't know.
I can see good and bad.
I don't see it being taken advantage of. That's one thing. We've long argued that the IRA limits should mirror the 401k limits. Why on earth you should be allowed to save more for retirement if your employer offers a certain type of plan versus making money on your own makes no sense to me. So that part I agree with, but I don't know. I'm not opposed to it off the bat, but I just don't see it being a big I don't think it solves any problems.
I guess the main thing I'm stuck on, I have no reservations whatsoever about the government plan that allows larger contributions and covers the gap by small companies that may not have 401k plans. I think that's great. It just levels the playing field for your own opt-in. Like, you can now play the game if you choose to, the way everybody else does. I think the match I'm a little stuck on. I just don't know. What do you guys think about the match piece?
I understand it.
It's incentive for sure.
Yeah. I don't want to disincentivize small business owners from starting 401k plans if you know that the general treasury is going to do a match. Why would you do it? That's my only concern.
There's another proposal in front of Congress that would mandate a 50 cent per hour contribution to a retirement plan for every employer in the country.
I don't like that.
No.
That's a non-starter.
I'm not happy about that.
Starting a small business is hard.
And
it's probably a lot of listeners. You can't just determine their revenue any further than the tax code already does.
Who remembers out there the MyRA?
Vaguely. But
big M, little Y, big R, big A.
Yeah.
That was Obama's contribution to trying to solve this problem. And it was so ineffective that it was canceled virtually immediately. It had 30,000 people express an interest in doing it. I don't even know how many of them ever put a penny in it.
30,000 of anything in the U.S. is basically zero.
Yeah, exactly. So Congress, well, actually the Treasury Department, wisely canceled it. Now, I don't know. I listen to the State of the Union. As I tell everybody, I did it so you don't have to. But it was actually pretty entertaining, I thought. But people who might need this are not watching the State of the Union. So what are we going to do to sell these people on the concept of getting started saving when they don't have $400 in the bank to meet a personal unexpected expense?
That's another thought that I had. If you're living on a cash paycheck week to week, you're probably not thinking of what does my retirement look like, I'm guessing.
That's about 40% of the country.
Wow.
Yeah. So I very much appreciate Trump's efforts and some of the people in Congress with their efforts to start solving this problem ongoing into the future. They tend to not think very far ahead, those people in Congress. And these are viable proposals. I'm just not sure how you're going to sell it. I'm not sure how I feel about matching. But if you want to try a 2-year trial, I'll sign that and support it.
I mean, a lot of people who operate like that could just incorporate and pay their taxes, including their Social Security, but they're not going to do it.
Nope.
Why would you?
Yeah.
That's a lot of money out of your pocket every month.
For listeners, you need 40 quarters of paying payroll tax in some fashion.
Yeah, and there's a certain minimum that you have to make in that quarter, but it's so low.
It's very low.
Up for discussion.
Right, and then that grants you access to a Social Security benefit of some kind. How big that is depends on how much you paid in.
And Medicare
but at least
as well.
In the game.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it would be a better solution to get your 40 quarters one way or another, whether that's through self-employment or working for someone else. But that's not, that's, I mean, if you are established as a, I don't know, a painter who works, you know, hourly, and you don't want to go work for someone else because you would have to pay payroll taxes, that's probably not going to happen.
And that you're doing it for the reason that, you know, live for Friday type reason, but you're shooting yourself in the foot.
Yeah, to a degree.
If you don't have, when you're 65, if you don't have the ability to sign up for Medicare and get Part A free,
I mean, that's devastating.
You're done. There's nothing you can do to come back from that at that stage in your life.
No.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you can get an indemnity. I'm not even sure how indemnity plans work at that point. They're not the same as like a catastrophe plan, which is what everybody has, but
or
everybody wants to have. I mean,
you know, I'm sitting here with a big old analog type clock in front of me. I watch the second hand go around, so I know when the breaks are coming. That kind of thing. I'm watching the TikToks go by, thinking Social Security in 2032 or 3 is going to have a big old problem. And the clock is ticking by just like it is in front of me. And I don't see anybody doing anything about it except trying to give away more money, more and more.
Yeah, they're, no one's going to touch that until they have to.
No. You know, this country's got massive problems and short-sighted politicians. That's nothing new. Been like this for
Politicians are only short-sighted because voters are short-sighted, and if you bring that topic up, you will immediately get unelected on your next election. So why would they touch
it? Yeah, to your point, though, there'll come a point where that the opposite becomes true overnight.
It's very true.
2030, if we're still saying the same thing, that election is going to be all Social Security.
Yeah. And you're going to see one thing happen, absolutely, and Adam and I've talked about this for sure. That day, whatever day they decide to do it, there will be no more cap on the income that you make that pays into Social Security. Mm-hmm. That cap will go away.
Yeah, that's coming.
That's the quickest thing they can do to help salvage the thing. There are many more, but we have to take another quick break. Can't believe how this is going by. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And lines are open, 904-222-8255. The question for the day, how many good old-fashioned pagers are still being used in this country despite all of the wonders of communication that we have created since then? You might be surprised. All right. It's hard to even know where to start. We're trying to solve Social Security in here in a three-minute break. I don't think we quite got there, but we certainly did identify a lot of the problems.
Yeah. Well, could be the start with that every proposal is going the other way, right, and funding it less or paying out more.
Because he who proposes the other way gets unelected real quickly.
Yep. Yeah.
I mean, you could even get recalled or impeached by some people anyway, but it's got to be fixed. And I pointed out that there's an election this year. If you're running for the Senate this year and you win, you just inherited a problem because it's 6 years till D-Day. So you have to do something, but you're entering the government where everybody knows if you do something, you're out. Talk about your rock and hard part, huh?
Yeah. It's,
I think there's,
what do you do about it? It's got to involve revenue. Well, how are they going to increase revenue?
Maybe, but also, like, the easiest popular thing to do would just be let bleed more of the general fund into Social Security somehow,
but
which is also possible.
It well, We have spiked it several times from general funds over the years. Yeah. But it's because they added a benefit that was not funded, so they also had to fund the benefit.
Yeah, but they make the law. They can change the law.
Yes. Like,
they can totally do that, and it probably will have to be done. But I also think they need to address the revenue side, and I think they need to bump the ages up again. When it was designed, the life expectancy of people was the – basically, the day you were eligible for Social Security was the day you were supposed to die.
My grandmother was born in 1908. Her life expectancy was 47.
Wow.
She died after 100 years and 3 days. And she collected every month.
She won that one.
You know, everybody talks about Ida Mae Fuller, but Norma Stout was pretty good at that, too.
That's true.
I always got a kick out of that. Not that it was very big, but it sure lasted a long time. Her payback was extraordinary, to say the least. And anyway, we have to do something about it. We have to do something about it with the Congress that we're going to be seating a year from now.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be curious how they do it.
But I guarantee you my 17-year-old does not care if his full retirement age is 67 or 70.
I pretty much promise you that.
Yeah.
Good morning, Lane.
Hey, how are you all doing?
We are great, and how are you?
Pretty good.
What's happening?
So setting aside for a second the political suicide nature of doing anything to Social Security, how problematic is the fact that my Social Security account and everybody who's listening gets impacted by the idiots in Congress taking part of our money and using it for other things, you know, Social Security, disability, all these other programs. And the other thing is the Ponzi scheme. So if we could transition to where your account meant your account, you know, it wasn't having to take out of the trust fund, what would that solve?
Well, you saw what they did to George W. Bush when he thought that might be a good idea.
It was a good idea. It's still a good idea. I agree with it 100%, but he got absolutely roasted for that.
Yep.
But
didn't he? Oh, my gosh.
If you want to know that it can work the right way, look no further than Canada. They don't spend the money. They invest the money.
Yeah.
And everybody gets paid, and the fund just keeps growing and growing and growing. It's largely invested in American stocks.
Man, can you imagine if we had...
Just described one of the Trump's initiatives of making the government TSP, the thrift savings plan, available on a wider scope.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you got hundreds of great civil servants there in the Jacksonville area, and so many of us were on the TSP and loved it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good plan.
You know, maybe you could wean some people all over to something like that for a while and kind of get it started gradually. But, yeah, you're right. The poor politician who tries to solve the problem is just ended their career.
Yeah. And where do you go when the only people who can change it are the people who can't change it because they're worried about their jobs? Are they going to grow into the prospect of retirement individually? Because that's what's going to happen to them. And yet, the worst wrath I can imagine anyone facing will be the wrath when somebody gets a 77% of their Social Security check.
Oh, my gosh.
And the people who are getting those checks are at least 62 years old and up. And there is no wrath like the wrath of old people when it comes to politics.
Because we vote, damn
it. Yeah. Well, here's the only upside of the population issues that we have.
Yeah.
Is that will be a substantial voting group relative to the rest of the voters.
Yep.
If you had a ton of young people, I think there's a chance politicians just wouldn't care as much.
Yeah, I think you're probably
right. But they're going to have to listen to them.
You're probably right.
Yeah.
Well, we understand the problem.
All right.
We sure don't have the answers.
Thank you gentlemen.
You want to take a shot at the trivial end?
Oh, my gosh. So refresh me, please, one more time. I was thinking about it before.
How many pagers, good old-fashioned pagers, are still
that's
working?
Right. Well, after the exploding pager caper in the Middle East.
We're only counting this country.
I'm thinking, let's see, docs used to be big into it. I'm going to say, I don't know, 5%?
Can you put a number on that?
Let's see. Less than 500,000.
All right, you're too low.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. That, see, I love it when I find questions like this because everybody gets surprised. And the reason I know they get surprised is because I was so surprised when I found it. So, not quite, but good idea. Thanks for the call.
Well, I'll be taking some of my 1970 proof coins to the coin show today to see what the price of gold is doing for it these days. So,
I think your timing is impeccable, and it'll probably go up this week, too. Because of the
wouldn't you think
problem?
Yeah, gold was higher this morning.
All right, thanks, Lynn. We appreciate it.
Yeah, silver too.
Yeah,
Bob.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. How are you?
There's two things that'll solve the. Well, there's one thing that will solve both the constipation in the House and Senate on getting things done, and that would be term limits.
That would help.
Sure would.
That would cause more. Flow of stuff, I think.
I do, too. Well, if you're not afraid of losing your job because you're not going to have it anyway,
I would think they'd probably be a little more amenable. You may get some stuff done.
Yeah.
Get stuff done a little faster.
Sure that's always a good thing, though.
Yeah, well, that's true, too.
Yeah. I mean, think of any second-term president you love or hate, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
A lot of difference there.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm going to take a guess. I'm going to say... On your trivia,
mm-hmm.
1,250,000 pagers.
All right, that is too high.
Doctors and drug dealers are the major users of pagers still.
Yep, that is too high. But we have a bracket. Not much time, but a bracket. So anybody wants to give it a shot, you got about a minute until I reveal the answer.
Okay. I'll hang up and listen to the answer. I'm really curious about this one. That's a good question, Steve.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. You have a good weekend.
Me too.
Yeah, it's...
It didn't hang up. I don't think.
It didn't?
No.
Sorry about that.
Oh, there we go.
There it goes. All right. Like I say, I always love being surprised. I go looking for things sometime, and when I find them, if I'm surprised, they become trivia questions. Other things I stumble on not looking and say, oh... My work is pretty done.
I said earlier, if you can't get more than 30,000 in America, that's basically zero. This is way more than 30,000.
It's not zero.
Who knew?
It is. There's versions of pagers, too. You can talk through some of them now without a telephone and things like that. But since nothing's ringing, it's 800,000 of them.
Wow.
And when you think about that, there are about... And working people, 180 million or something like that. So it's a very small subset of people working, but that's not the only thing they're used for. But you would still think that a technology like that that's been around so long, and there's so many options, you know, things you're going to be able to put on your lapel or put your glasses on. I kind of think that that number will be dwindling now, but for the right situation, it's obviously...
How many of those are useful. Like doctors?
I don't know for sure.
Okay. But also, it's not the pager. Finding a pager isn't that hard. It's finding the payphone to return the call that's really hard. Because that's what we used to do back in the day when you got paged.
Well, that's why the more modern ones that work like a walkie-talkie with a pager device on them.
Mm-hmm.
When Paul Castellano would shoot you a page and you had to call the boss, get the job done.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well... You know that, like I said, that one just kind of hit me in the face this morning. All right, before we got about a minute left, I don't know what's going to happen with the Iran thing. Nobody in this room does. Nobody listening does. But it's going to be severe, and it might take a little while. But what's left of them, I can picture in my mind, and I'll never forget the picture of the 1970s schoolroom. Teenage girls in their bobby socks and white blouses and black skirts, and they were all gorgeous and lively. And then there's the post-Ayatollah version of the same picture, and it's a bunch of black robes with little slits for the eyes.
Yeah.
I think the victim in that is not only the girls, but also the high school boys who don't get to look at them. Because they're so pretty. They're that young.
I just hope that it works out for the people of Iran. Yeah, they don't deserve the current administration.
It's an historic chance for them to take control. Every other time they've tried it, we had a president who was not gutsy enough to do it. All right. See you next week, same time. Thanks for listening today, and good luck this week to all of us. This is the Van Wepenen.